interview for the British Hindu Oral History Project. It's the 25th of 7, 2004, and I was speaking to
Suresh Nalanthigal.
Right, basically just some background questions about your family.
Okay.
Where are your parents from?
Originally, they're from Andhra Pradesh, which is the southeast coast of India.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is that where your family's from as well? And you still got family there?
Yeah, basically, we've got my mum, dad, myself, and my sister, the only immediate family in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got my grandparents who are still back in Andhra,
mm-hmm.
in a town called Nasapur,
mm-hmm.
which is my mum's side. And then most of my mum's family, her two younger brothers and their families are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And her two oldest brothers are in Hyderabad, which is the capital of Andhra. And then my dad's family are mainly based, a couple of people, brothers and sisters, still left in Hyderabad, but mostly in America now.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone over to, and they've settled there.
Mm-hmm. So, now, have you been back?
To India?
Yeah.
Yeah, we go pretty much once every other year, that's it.
When's the last time, when's the first time you went there, your first experience of going back?
I believe it was 1985. Which was when I was 2 years old.
Okay.
So I sort of remember it in bits, but the first time that I went, when I realised that I was going back, was probably 1993,
mm-hmm.
which is, there's a big gap. We didn't go between 85 and 93 financially, and
mm-hmm.
things, dad and mum were still setting up. So
yeah.
Then we went in 93 for 2 months, which was the time where I met all my relatives for the first time, basically, which I remember. And that was pretty awesome, meeting everyone. So much family as well. The dad's 6 brothers, 3 sisters, mom's
really?
Got 4 brothers and a sister, and they've all got sons and daughters and things, so yeah, quite a lot of people.
I'm not sure if you know anything, but a little bit, maybe if you tell me about your mum and dad, what's their name?
My dad's Ram Nalanthigal, and my mum's called Jyotirlata. He's from Andhra as well. They're both from Andhra, obviously. He studied as an electrical engineer,
mm-hmm.
and he went to University of Andhra, then on to IIT Bombay, which is one of the top technological
mm-hmm.
institutes in India.
Yeah.
And from there, he got a scholarship for Southampton
mm-hmm.
University, where he did his master's.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to Birmingham to do some further studies for 2 years. And now he works for the Ministry of Defence.
Mm-hmm.
Does
he work overseas in this country?
No, he's in this country. He's based in Bristol, in Abbey Wood. He works for, it's the where they relocated. They decentralised to Abbey Wood.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in there. He's the change manager on the Eurofire project.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my mum's she works part-time in a nursery, and she also works in Tesco's.
Mm-hmm. So, and you live in Birmingham?
We live in Bristol.
Oh, you live in Bristol?
Yeah, we live in Bristol.
I'm
at university here.
Oh, are you?
So
okay.
I've stayed up here while the camp's been on. Well, I'm here anyway, so
yeah.
I've got a job up here. So,
what are you studying?
I'm doing computer science with software engineering.
Oh, right, okay. And
I'm just about to go into my second year.
And what's the idea of that? What's your
plan? Well, originally I wanted to do medicine, but I sort of decided not to at last minute, so I did a sort of blind. I just went for the next best thing, which I thought was competitive at the time, and it's computer science. I don't know if I'm going to go into computer science afterwards, though. Or maybe at a push, I might go into web design, but I'm thinking of completely changing track and maybe going elsewhere. I'm not entirely sure yet. I haven't really thought about it, but I know I'm definitely not going to be a programmer.
Too boring. do you know what your parents came over here?
I think my dad was over here in around 1970.
Mm-hmm.
He's been here about 34 years, yeah. And I think when my mum came in 1978, they married in 78,
mm-hmm.
and she came over pretty much straight away with
yeah.
dad. So that was her first time.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of any sort of like maybe hardships they had when they first came over, or was it quite easy for them?
I've not really spoken to my dad about it, because he was here obviously before. I think he pretty much integrated into university quite easily.
Yeah.
He was quite happy with it, and
yeah.
he was used to being away from his home anyway in
yeah.
India. So he was all right, and he'd been here for 7 years before my mum came over. So he was able to show her the ropes.
Yeah.
Plus, he'd also met quite a few good, close family friends that he'd made, and they welcomed mum and sort of showed her. I think the problem she's had with language, and also in India, she's from quite a wealthy family where they did everything. She never had anyone to cook. She didn't have to cook or anything. People cooked for her. And so coming over here, we haven't got that. So she's had to learn to cook and clean and do everything what a housewife would do.
Yeah.
Which she's done really well. And so the main difficulties for them, and I still feel for my mum, is she misses her parents and she misses being around immediate family, because there's no one to, you can't just say, right, I'm popping over to my sister's house or I want to get on the phone to my parents all the time because it's so expensive and they're just not near. And we are actually a 4-people family unit. That is it. The only people we have are us.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite trying for them in times, because they just, you know, sometimes they just want to be able to relax, you know, send us to an uncle or something and let him deal with us for a bit if we're naughty or whatever. Yeah. But there's no way of doing that. It's just us. So that's one of the hardest things.
Yeah. So you said you had, was it a brother and a sister?
I've got a sister.
Sarika. How old is she?
She's 17. She's just finished her first lower six. She just finished lower six, her first year of A-levels.
Yeah. And I just wanted to basically, like, being in the UK, you're born here, what was your connection, or when you went back, or when you go to the temple, do you feel that you automatically fit in with the whole program, or do you feel that, because,
yeah, I see where you're coming,
because you are a little bit more isolated, I guess, so I mean, how does that...
We've been brought up pretty much, not strictly, but mum and dad are quite strong Hindus, so we've always had that influence when we're at home. We do puja for all the celebrations, and we've got pictures of the god idols everywhere and things, and generally we speak to our family from home a lot. I don't actually feel left out when I come to this temple, especially because I've been part of the Balaji youth group, which is a week-long camp, which has really helped to integrate and help me identify with Hinduism. When I come here, I don't feel left out because I know everyone and they all know me, and I'm able to help out and do service and not be isolated in any way. And everyone here is in the same boat, basically. All the children that come here are basically all British-born Hindus. Mm. So it's okay. When I go back home, I do stand out a bit. My sister and myself, we do stand out when we go because we are different looking. The environment, I don't know what, it's obviously the way we're brought up and in the environment that we are and what we eat and everything. Mm. We don't look like your average Indians when we go back there. Yeah. They can pick us out. I mean, the locals can pick us out no problem.
Yeah, without, quite tall.
Yeah, exactly. It's tallness, and I don't know what it is. I suppose even if I dressed like they did, which I don't, I wear jeans and things, you know, in India they wear cotton trousers and shirt, but even if I dress like they did, they can just point me out, you know. And my sister as well, we're quite fair as well for being from South India.
Mm.
I think that's one of the things, which sort of makes it a bit, we're a bit on show when we're walking down the street and things, but when you go into the temple, all that just seems to disappear. The priests are pretty easy about it. They don't point us out or anything. Mm. It just all happens, and because we've always got some relatives around us that do it for us, the transition's pretty easy. So I never actually feel isolated or anything like that. Mm. Maybe a little bit when I'm in India, but not really, because I spent about 2 months of last year there on my own, just without anyone of my family from here, just on my own over there and looking after myself. And I think that helped a lot, just to integrate into it all.
Where did you go?
I went to Hyderabad and I toured a bit of Andhra Pradesh. And I went to all my family's houses, you know, because in India the distances are a bit bigger than here. So to go from my granddad to my uncle, it was an overnight train journey and things like that. So I did that on my own. I also went down south to Tirupati and to see where the Balaji is meant to be and things. It was just an amazing experience, especially to be on my own. You didn't have people just arranging stuff for you, so I could just see how I got on and how. And to be fair, they're one of the most friendliest people that I've ever met, and they really helped me. Yeah, everyone there is really good.
I just want to go just a little bit through like religious practices in your family.
Okay.
Like you touched on it a bit when you said like they are quite, you know,
yeah.
They do the pujas and stuff. So, in your family, I mean, is that always been the case when you're growing up that there always has been like a puja in the morning,
yeah,
and then go to the temple and stuff like that?
Pretty much. My mum normally, my dad every morning after his bath, he goes and stands before even a picture of God and just says a few words very quickly, but he's done it all his life, and before he goes to bed he says something, and he's taught us prayers and things, but he's left it up to us whether we want to do it. But we always have, I always have an idol near me, but when I'm at uni and stuff, I've got a couple of idols that I keep on my shelf. And
who do you have?
I have Lord Ganesh, who's meant to be the god of knowledge, who I have near, and I also have Hanuman, who's the monkey god, but the one that looks like a monkey, but he's the guy that's meant to give you strength, and so I have those. And also Hinduism is, they're not individual gods, because the way I perceive it, there's only one. It's just how you see it, at all these different idols that people have. They're not different, they're just different incarnations of the same being. So I have those two because I look for knowledge and I look to be confident in myself. But then I also have obviously a ring of Venkateshwara Balaji, which is he is the main incarnation, and from him comes everyone else. Lord Rama, Krishna comes from that. So, so I have that. But my mum's like every week she does a big, on Saturday she wakes up in the morning and does a puja, and she makes food and she like presents it to the idol just to be blessed with before we eat and things. And then temple wise probably we come to this temple maybe once a month because it's quite a drive, but we've got a local temple in Bristol I'm not there now, but my parents tried to go at least once a week, so
but it's not on the scale of this one.
Nowhere near. Yeah, totally. But this one's sort of, they're totally different as well, because that's a North Indian temple mainly run by Gujaratis, so it's got a whole different emphasis. They have Krishna Rama, and this is South Indian, so we're mainly for Lord Balaji.
Yeah.
It's totally different. And that's a converted church, and this is
custom built. It is. When you go to different temples, I've spent my whole life going around different temples.
Yeah. Right.
Because, you know, where I've been brought up and stuff. But you can definitely pick up the mood of a temple pretty quickly if you go into it.
Yeah.
Like Balaji, this one is, it's got quite a good mood actually.
Yeah, you think I like it. I think the only thing that spoils this temple is the committee, the people that run it seem to tend to get a bit over anxious. They don't, and it sort of spoils the ambience. But if you come here on a normal, this Sunday was obviously really busy, but if you come here on I came a couple of weeks ago just on my own from uni, just to come and sit and do some, I'm doing some work for them anyway on the computer, so I came on my own, and it was so peaceful, and I literally sat upstairs in silence for about an hour and a half while the puja was going on, but it was just so quiet and peaceful, and that's what I like about it. Is
do you know if your family ever had any sort of family gurus?
No.
Stay at your house, any gurus or swamis that stay at your
Again, this is all from our, because we've been part of the youth camp now since about 97, me and my sister and myself.
Yeah.
There was a Swamiji that came, he's called Swami Siddhananda. He's part of he's built his own ashram of self-knowledge, and he's got ashrams all over the world, but mainly based in, the main headquarters is Madras.
Yeah.
And we got on really well with him. And he's got a pupil, so a brahmachari, called who's Vishwa Chaitanya, who actually was here for it. He used to work here as well. And he came for the camps and run the camps, and they're very, very learned people, yet very young. I think this, well, Swami Siddhananda, he's only 50, and the other guy, he's about 30, not really old at all, but the amount of knowledge that they have brought together and taught themselves, and how they understand the world and their outlooks on everything, they're absolutely amazing. So as a sort of, we've adopted them as our family gurus, and they come, whenever they come from India, they always stay with us for a few days, and dad organises talks around the local community for them to do and things. So they're pretty much what we have to look up to, and they really help me. I mean, if I ever have any problems, they're on email now. So 21st century priests, yeah. And they've got a mobile phone and stuff. So I'll just ring them or email them, and they're always willing to chat and help me out, which is really awesome.
I know, it's kind of a bit of a strange, I got a couple of questions, which are kind of not very easily answerable, but do you know what makes you a Hindu?
Well, that is a hard question. I think what makes me a Hindu is what I've been taught from my parents, the way they been brought up, I'm not talking culturally, but their values in religious terms when they talk about another being such as God, and they talk about doing puja, and they talk about you've got to come to the temple and do seva.
Mm.
And my understanding on that is they've given me always the choice to choose. And Hinduism, I really strongly believe that whatever anyone tells me, I really strongly believe that it's not meant to be a religion, it's just meant to be a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And what Hinduism does, if you read the Bhagavad Gita and stuff, which I've read snippets of, I've not read it fully, but and any other religious text that I do read, they always give you a guide. They always tell you what they perceive as the right way or what you should do, but always at the end of the day you've got your choice of whether you want to do it or whether you don't want to do it, and there's always a conscience within you that says, that knows inherently what is pretty much right and what is wrong. It's just being able to do the right thing when you have desire to do others. I think it's all a free choice. I think I'm a Hindu because I've chosen to follow the values that I'm given by my parents and by the temple. And when there's camps such as the Balaji Youth Camp, or there's anything that is involved with Hinduism, I like to be part of it. And I think myself, I relate more to this religion than any other religion. And it guides me in more ways than any other religion would do. And I believe that what advice I'm given from priests, from teachers, from my dad, from my mum, I think I agree with most on the whole, and that's because my inside me, it says, yeah, this is right, this is how I should do it. I think that's one of the things that it makes me Hindu, because I've chosen to follow by the values that are written out by the scriptures.
Do you believe in karma, reincarnation?
Reincarnation. Yeah, I think I do.
Not sure, but yeah.
Because I believe it in God.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that all that we hear about people like Rama and Lakshma, everyone, they're all reincarnations of the being.
Mm-hmm.
They all come down to guide people. They don't tell them what to do. They never come down to sort. To say, right, you're doing this wrong, they've not done that. They don't come to kill enemies, they come to guide the good, or to guide what they think is right, and then at the end of the day, it's free will to choose.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's for Kalki.
Huh?
Except for Kalki.
Yeah.
He comes down, he does kill.
Yeah, they do. I mean, yeah, they do kill, I suppose. Yeah, I think
occasionally.
Yeah.
At the end of time, you know.
Yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is just the underlying factor beneath it all is we're always given a moral.
Yeah.
And that moral is something that we can choose. After they've done all their killing, the god, they come down, they can do all their killing, they kill the bad guy.
Mm.
But there's always that chance for another bad guy to come straight. They can go back, and they've taught what they've had to teach, and it's up to us to carry it on.
What do you feel, what happens to you when you die, and not just when you die this time, but what would be, if you believe in reincarnation, you believe in life after, you know, you'd have another life, and if you were to do pious things, then you'd get benefit in your next, but what would be the ultimate?
When you're everything.
What do you mean everything?
Because I believe that God is everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and so I believe that when that ultimate, when you do finally pass through into the next phase, when you've had your reincarnation, I believe you become part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You become part of a god.
Yeah. I was gonna say is a little bit on like because you have in the Hindu like youth camp.
Yeah.
I was asking a few questions about it.
Okay.
Like the Hindus today, generally in the UK, the younger generation, would you say they're less knowledgeable than the fathers and stuff? Their fathers were at that age. Do you think it's
in the Hindu community? Yeah, I do think that.
Do you think that's changing?
I think it's slowly changing. I think there's a massive thing now. What I've noticed in the last few years is that not Hindus, but people are identifying themselves as Indians, or they're identifying themselves as Pakistanis or Bangladeshis. We're beginning to identify ourselves as our country of birth, not necessarily as Hindus, but with that, I think maybe it will become the wanting to learn more about where we come from than turning around and saying that I'm an Indian, so my parents are Hindu, so wanting to find out about that, that'll improve the knowledge. But at the moment, I do think that my dad, when he was younger, had a lot more knowledge about Hinduism than I did, purely because he was brought up in a Hindu society.
Yeah.
I bet I have a lot better knowledge of Christianity than he does, purely because I've been brought up in a pretty much Christian society when I was younger. And when I was at school, we had to go, it wasn't a religious school, it was a normal comprehensive, but we still once a week or maybe once every 2 weeks we had to go to the local church and we'd have a talk by a reverend and we'd do some hymns and things. So I just think it's the environment that we're brought up in. I mean, it will improve because your parents do a good job of teaching us. But I don't know whether I will do... Actually, no, because I don't think I'll do as good a job at teaching Hinduism to my kids than my parents did to me, because they have that greater knowledge. The only thing that I can do for them is my limited knowledge pass on to them, send them to their grandparents to get taught, or camps such as these.
Yeah.
The Balaji Youth Camp is going on for like 12 years, 13 years now. And if it carries on, these things will help children of the future to identify with Hinduism. But I'll never force it upon any of my children. It'll always be their choice whether they want to or not. But obviously, the way I'll live my life and the way when they go and see my mum and dad, and there will be some Hindu elements to it. It'll be sort of biased towards that, but they'll never be forced to do it.
What about other Hindu communities that like? Because with Hinduism, it's very splintered in regards to like because you have the right to interpret things in any way you want.
Yeah,
you know that it's so sort of fragmented. Do you think that it's important for like other Hindus of other different groups to be more sort of unanimous and to be more sort of
united?
Yeah.
Obviously, that would be a dream, I think, if all the Hindu segments all came together and performed as one. I think it would be really amazing because it would strengthen Hinduism and people, and then more people would be educated. I'm not talking about non-Hindus, but like me, I'd be educated even more if I had more people around me all the time. But I think the communities develop not only because of Hinduism being splintered and quite free as a religion, saying you choose what you want to do, but also because of the community spirit of India. If you look, I don't know if you've noticed, but if you talk to people, they always will identify with themselves, like Gujaratis. They're all a big, strong community. Punjabis, the Andhras, we are Telugu people. It's all a language thing. So that's one of the things that promotes that splint, segmentation. It's the fact that in India, every state has a different language and a different way of life. So they always stick together. So as soon as we come to this country, my parents, the first thing they do is, when we moved to Bristol 6 years ago, they tried to find out as many Telugus as they could find. And we've got about 6-7 families that we're together. But then after that, we look for the next... Then we look for the other Indian families around and become friends with them, you know, because it's someone that we can identify with. But I believe if it all came together, it would be great, but I don't think it would ever happen purely because of the segmentation in India. It's not that we're enemies or rivals in any way, but we're just comfortable with being with our Telugu people, because obviously for my mum, in one way, it's a language thing. She prefers speaking Telugu all the time. And that's basically why when we do our functions and when we do stuff in the house, like big pujas, and we invite friends from around, more often than not, we'd probably first ring all the Telugu families to come, then ring anyone else. But everything that would happen in the house would always be based around the Telugu way of happening. We wouldn't not cater for anyone else, but it would be, so they'd have to adapt to how it is.
What about at the mother tongue, do you speak?
I speak Telugu fluently, and I speak it pretty fluently. I can understand it completely, but I don't read or write.
You don't read or write?
No.
Do you think it's important to learn the mother tongue?
I do. I do think it's important. Not only does it makes my mum happy to know that I can speak it, and it passes on to the next generation their history, but also to go home, it's the only way I think it's the best way of communicating with my relatives, because they're not strong English speakers.
No.
So
how about when you're in other parts of India? I mean, what do you speak? Can you speak any Hindi?
I can't speak Hindi. It's basically Hindi. If you can speak Hindi in India, you can pretty much get around the whole of the country, because it's the second language. So they're taught their own tongue, but the next one is Hindi, and then English as well.
Yeah.
They're both. English will get you round. There's no doubt about it. You can talk to all the shop guys, the auto drivers, the auto rickshaws.
Yeah.
They will all speak English with you. Hindi is the way to properly communicate, but I don't speak it, so I find it. I'm pretty much as, unless I'm in Andhra Pradesh speaking Telugu, I'm pretty much foreigner in India.
Yeah.
So.
Especially in rural areas.
Definitely.
What about the caste issue? Do you have any opinions on that? Being from the, I guess you'd be would you be second generation?
I don't really agree with the caste system at all.
Don't think it really applies. Do you think
it doesn't? I mean, it doesn't really apply, but we're always told, they always talk about it when we're in India. I'm a Brahmin. I'm born into a Brahmin family, so I'm like the highest caste. And on top of that, I'm a Vaishnavite, which is the highest caste of Brahmin.
Yeah.
But I don't believe caste is anything. I feel it's unfair to judge people on who they're born to, because it's hypocritical. Because no one, it's just being judgmental on an issue that someone else you can't do anything about it. I can't help being born to who I was born to. I can't help it. So if I start judging other people and saying, you were born, if I say the untouchables, they used to be in India. If you say, if you judge people because of that, I think that is totally and utterly wrong. You can't. You judge people on who they are and what they make of themselves. But then you still don't have to start putting them into sections.
Because I feel like research quite a bit, there's quite a bit of saying, there's some stories that go like, with the decline, especially in certain parts of India, of Hinduism because of the Muslims, that like with the Brahmin class had some part to play with it, because there was a point in some areas that they became extremely arrogant of their status,
right?
And that did have some part to play with the conversion of Muslims to certain areas.
Yeah.
So and there's also stories of so people who are from lower classes becoming Brahmins, and vice versa.
That happens. Yeah.
So I guess, do you think in India that it's not applicable either? In this age.
It's not in this age. I mean, not as much. But I still know that people, when they do arranged marriages, which is still happens a hell of a lot in India, it's not going away. It's still arranged marriage is the first thing that happens. It's not a love marriage. They still state in the, when they look for people, same caste.
Yeah.
They still ask for people of the same caste, Brahmin to Brahmin. Even in my family now, they still will ask to marry into another Brahmin family. It still applies, but not as, I mean, I think people are a lot more open-minded, where they welcome people of all different backgrounds to come into their home. But underneath all of it, underneath the front, is still that feeling, especially to the generation before me, like my father's brothers and things.
Yeah.
There's still that feeling that I think even my father, ideally, would like me to marry. He won't ever tell me to, but I feel that probably he would like me to marry a Brahmin Telugu girl.
Yeah.
But he knows that, well, I've been brought up here, and he knows that it just happens. Who I'm going to marry is whatever, and he's never going to fight against it. But there's still that underlying thing, I think, in the generation before me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty much phased out with our generation, especially being British.
Mm.
And in India, I think also it's slowly being phased out, but there's still pressure from the parents that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you want to please them, so you will do whatever. If they create, do an if you have an arranged marriage, you'll be with someone of your own caste.
Mm. And what about like being a British, I guess, I don't know how to explain, but basically a British Hindu in India? I mean, because, you know, what would you, if somebody goes, where are you from? You'd say, well, you know, you're from Britain, or you're from England, or from wherever you were born. But, you know, how would you categorise yourself?
I always say I'm born in Britain. Well, on the forms and things, I always say I'm an Indian, Anglo-Indian.
Mm.
So I'm born in Britain,
mm.
but I am an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It depends on where I am or what I'm doing. I mean, when I go to India, I say I'm British, but I'm an Indian.
Mm.
When I'm here and I'm out with my friends and whatever, I'm a British because that's what I am. But essentially, I'm a bit of both. I'm British. I've been brought up in as an English person, and also I have very strong Indian blood in me, and my background is from India.
This pretty much has come to the end of it now, but I want to ask you, like, why do you think it is that Hindus especially, and British Hindus are the most sort of successful ethnic group in Britain?
Well, do you mean sort of
any other group of people that have come from different, you know, if you take people from you know, or anywhere else, like, you know, Chinese or Japanese people,
okay.
or any other ethnic group that's in the UK, in the UK at the moment, why do you think that it's actually Hindus that are
is it really?
Yeah.
Even more than Muslim?
Oh yeah.
We're more successful as
in
the way that we've settled into
in
the
financially country. Settled and also, like, integration
wise, it's because our parents always teach us that we're not in our own home country, and we have to integrate as much as possible because our lives are going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I've never looked upon myself as different from anyone else, apart from obviously visually.
Mm.
I still see myself as British, and I'm as British as anyone else that was born here.
Mm.
So I try, and as much as I can, I always try and just do that. I don't try and push myself out as different. Hindu-wise, because we're pretty easy and laid back. We don't have strict rules, and we don't follow or adhere to very strict rules. And we're not. Oh, if you're white, you can't be with us.
Mm.
We try and integrate with everyone.
Mm.
And financially and academically, we're just always taught from a young age to work hard, work really, really hard. We've got no one else. We've got no one that can support us. So you work hard and do the best that we can. And that's just the philosophy we have on life. We have that philosophy. I think maybe that's where the caste thing comes from, I think, a little bit, because the families that do come over, Indian families especially, that come over, maybe not in the beginning, but nowadays, a lot more, they're middle class families.
Mm.
They went to really good schools in India, and so their philosophy on life for their children is to work as hard as you can, send them to good schools, for education first, make a success of your life, then sort out everything else. So I've always been taught, always, just to work as hard as I can in order to achieve the best that I can. I've always been top of your class, top of whatever. It's just something that is inherent within us.
Mm.
We're always told to do it, and we obviously can. So that's the reason.
Okay, this is the last question. I'd just like to ask you, is there anything else you'd like to add about anything you like, any final thought, or anything about the youth camp, or anything at all?
Well, basically, probably promoting the youth camp.
Yeah.
Well, not even that. I feel that in Britain, it's it's relatively easy. I think it's easier than a lot of other countries to be who we are and do what we do. It's a very secular country, and it's welcomed people with open arms into it. There's obviously the problems internally. You've got, you know, when other beliefs clash, for say, for the example, British National Party, or when other people's beliefs clash, there's going to be trouble and problems. But on the whole, I find it, I find being a British Hindu in this country, I find I'm comfortable with it. I've been brought up on a council estate, so I had my trouble of racism. I've had a fair share of it, I had a lot of it. But I've always just got over it, and I've always had friends around me, non-Asian, English friends around me, always, who've always stuck up for me. And I think it's getting more accepted, and people are developing a wider mind and broadening their minds to the fact that not everything is based on colour or race. It's the person inside, and you get more accepted for who you are and what you are. And I think the Balaji Youth Camp really promotes that within Hindu children who don't know, maybe who are not guided or anything. It's welcome to anyone to come in and just try and identify with people of their own, people who experience things with like them, who they may not have met before, and they can talk about it and hopefully go back and be more comfortable with who they are and not be scared of who they are. Because at the end of the day, I can't help what I am and you can't help what you are, but we have to be comfortable with it, because without that there's nothing else. If you're not happy with yourself for what you are, then I don't think life will be ever be good to you. That's it.
Thank you for your time.
That's all right.